Okay, good morning. I'm not sure what the organizers had in mind when they put me on headers in 80 day. I suspect it might have been a recent work with Trina on spatial heterogeneity in the presence of a structural barrier modeling study, attempting to draw some insights on, further insights on work from the Rosenbaum group, where they did some laser ablation in a tissue, and they found that scar tissue basically raised the threshold of alternance. But hopefully, since Trina's here, hopefully she'll get a chance to talk about that next week in the unscheduled week. So I decided to talk about something different, and this is a recent unpublished work that we've been doing on, and we is Pete Jordan is a graduate student in our group, and I'm going to be talking about the heterogeneity. This is sort of a forced title to fit today, but the heterogeneity, potential heterogeneity among cell types in the mechanism of alternance. Some of the talks yesterday had a lot of, like Alenz in particular, a lot of extensive work covering many different studies, but we only have one study in this area, so I'm only going to be talking about one study this morning. As a way of introduction, I wanted to highlight, potentially paraphrase, I don't have the direct quote, a comment that Niels made yesterday, which I thought was at least resonated with me, in that he said that something to the extent of we need to get a better understanding of the nature of the coupling in real cells. Several groups, in particular work by Alain and Johannes, have done a lot of very nice work in establishing if you have this type of coupling, you'll get this type of response. If you have this type of coupling, you'll get this type of response, both in the mechanism of single cell alternance and in spatiotemporal alternance, and also even in the discordant alternance inside the cell. But I think what Niels meant, or at least what I took him to mean, was that we still don't necessarily have a really good handle on in real cells which of the where in that parameter regime a given cell is. We have some evidence, and I happen to think it's not as strong as some other people, and I'm going to be talking about that. We saw this yesterday two or three times, so I'm not going to spend much time on it, but basically this was work from the UCLA group in which they did an action potential clamp experiment where when they paced, free-running pacing with no action potential clamp, they saw calcium alternans. And when they then, instead of free-running pacing, they applied action potential clamp, they still saw calcium alternans. In that work, the statement is made that any beat-to-beat alternations in the intercellular calcium transient must be an inherent property of intracellular calcium dynamics and not secondary to the alterations in the action potential. That statement obviously applies to these cells, to the AP clamp cells, but I'm going to try to maybe be a bit provocative and suggest that this may not be applicable to paced unclamped cells. And I'm going to have, there's going to be three reasons, and I'm going to get to those. So this is all a modeling study. I don't have any real data here today. This is the approach that we're going to that we used in this study. This is a bit wordy, but basically, what we tried to do is we want to uncouple the contributions of voltage coupling and calcium system coupling, and I'm going to show a schematic on the next slide which shows exactly what I mean by that, by using action potential clamping and something that we call calcium system clamping. And I want to stress that this calcium system clamping is not experimentally realizable, at least currently, or at least in any way that we can think about, that we were able to think about. But we do believe it's a powerful modeling tool to help gain some insight. We're going to be using it on ionic models, and we're going to systematically scan the entire range of BCLs for which alternans occurs. There's a lot of relevant work in the past that has looked in this area, and at risk of insulting others, I'm just going to highlight basically this particular study, Johannes, Olen. They did similar using a MAP model, which we heard about yesterday. The advantage of this approach is that MAP models can be studied analytically. One disadvantage is it's not a MAP model is not an ionic model. What we're doing is we're trying to accomplish the same thing using an ionic model. In fact, several ionic models. They did use an ionic model, and they largely used it to investigate concordant, discordant electromechanical coupling as functions of positive and negative voltage and calcium coupling. Most of the insight on the contributions of the voltage system and calcium system coupling came from the MAP model.
Dave, you should probably say for some people who don't know what a MAP model is, like a cardiac mapping.
A MAP model, instead of having all the different ordinary... Instead of having all the ordinary differential equations for the ion, for the ion channels and all the other components of the cell, has doing it continuously, a MAP model is discrete in that it defines the state of a system at one point in time or one beat as entirely as an analytical function of that system previously. So, for example, you could have a MAP model where the action potential duration at beat n plus 1 is equal to some function of the action potential duration at beat n. The restitution curve would be an example of that. Once we do this, the way that we're going to attempt to quantify the voltage and calcium system coupling is by using eigenmode analysis. And I'll talk about that in a couple of slides. Okay, so this is our general approach. And so this is just a cartoon schematic breaking the cell into sort of sub-components. This box here is meant to represent all of the membrane ion channels. This here represents the L-type calcium current and the sodium-calcium exchange current. And this represents, in this case, for what I'm going to be calling the Schiffox model. The Schiffox model is what, in our group, we call the Schiffero modification of the Fox CVM model. And credit that name was developed by Trina. But so for the rest of the study, this is the model that we use the most, and I'm going to be referring it to by that. So anyway, this circle here in the Schiffox model, which is shown here if you ignore these X's, indicates these calcium concentrations. The subspace concentration, CS, C. I actually don't. CI is the concentration here, and CJ and CJ prime are concentrations within the sarcoplasmic reticulum. So that's what I'm just bundling those together, grouping those together here in this component. Okay, so if we have a free-running paste cell, then coupling it occurs via all of these arrows. And so, for example, these are all function of voltage. They feed back on voltage, which in turn affects L-type calcium and sodium-calcium exchange current, which both also affect voltage. And these two both affect this calcium system. If we're doing action potential clamping, then these arrows indicated by this dotted line aren't here. So by action potential clamping, we're basically holding the membrane potential at some target waveform. And so therefore, the voltage is still affecting these currents, but these currents have no effect back on the voltage. And therefore, they are uncoupled from the rest of the system and from the calcium system, at least in this model. There may be some other pathways, but at least in this model and the models that we've been studying. For calcium clamping, which I will explain in a bit, we're basically removing this arrow here. And so in this case, the calcium concentration is clamped to a fixed, each of these concentrations are clamped to particular waveforms. And so they are not allowed to free run, but they still affect L-type calcium and sodium calcium exchange current. But there's no reverse. So, and therefore they don't affect the membrane potential. So there's no pathway to get here. And you can, this red dotted arrow here indicates that these currents are essentially not playing in the system during action potential clamping, and these calcium concentrations are absent during calcium clamping. Okay, let me do a one slide introduction to the Eigenmode method developed by Lee and Otani. Niels, feel free to jump in if anything I say is butchering the basic idea, but I'm not going to go deep into the math here, largely because I'm not capable of doing that. But the first thing that has to be done is that, so Eigenmode analysis, the idea here is that we want to determine the stability of the period one action potential morphology. So you have action potentials at slow pacing rates that are periodic, say the same morphology at every beat. In that case, it's a stable system. The period one is stable. When you bifurcate into alternants, that period one morphology becomes unstable, and it bifurcates into a period two morphology. But you can still determine the stability of that even during alternants. You can determine the stability of the period one morphology, and I'll talk about that how we do that in a couple of slides. But the first thing you have to do is you need to locate the period one rhythm. During pacing at slow pacing rates, the period one there is a period one rhythm. This is just meant to represent alternance. So there's a long followed by short. So this is like APD versus ED. Long, short, long, short, long, short. And somewhere in here is the unstable period one fixed point. Now, this vector X represents all of the components of a given model. So in this case, X is voltage at time T, calcium, all the calcium concentrations. So this is just a very simplified notation. Sodium gates. What you do is you have your system in your period one, and at any point in the phase of the action potential, you make a perturbation to any one variable. And so in this case, this first perturbation was made to the membrane potential. And then what you do is you integrate your equations in one entire exact basic cycle length. And you then observe the change in the system and the change in every variable as a function of that perturbation to the one variable. Then you repeat that, and you do that for every variable in the system. So you're going to have a lot of perturbations. And so what you're doing is you're establishing the sensitivity of the system at that basic cycle length, at that period one, to perturbations to every variable. And then you can do you can get a matrix of that sensitivity, and you can determine the eigenvalue of that matrix. The alternans eigenvalue is defined as the largest negative eigenvalue. So if you have, basically, if you have an eigenvalue of magnitude greater than 1, in this case the alternans eigenvalue is negative. So if you have something less than negative 1, the period 1 system is unstable. It won't stay there. It will bifurcate into alternans. If you have something that's magnitude less than 1, then the system is stable. And it's how far you move away from that one value that determines how stable your system is. If you're very, very negative, your system is much more unstable if you're at minus 1.001. And if you're at way up near 0 as opposed to near negative 1, you are much more stable. All right, Colleen.
How do you choose the amplitude?
Well, you want to do it small. So that you stay within your linear regime of your perturbations. Make it too big, it's going to blow up.
How do they do this for unstable
pure the lung motion?
The first thing you have to do is you have to get the system into that unstable period. I'm going to talk about that, how you actually do that.
Another question. So how are you sure that the small perturbation you put in the variable is consistent between the variables?
That's a good question. I don't think it has to be. Niels will correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it has to be consistent, because both your inputs and your outputs are all available to your available when you're solving this matrix. So your response to a perturbation, if your perturbation to M is an order of magnitude larger, normalized to the baseline value of M relative to your perturbation to H, then your response of all your variables should be incorporated into your response of all your variables. I think as long as it's not too large, and I'm sure there's an analytical solution to say how big is too large, but certainly if it's so large that it causes the system to blow up, that's a problem. But basically, it has to stay within the linear. You have to stay within a linear regime. So you make a small perturbation. If you move it so far that you start to move into a nonlinear regime, then it's not valid. Niels, do you have any elaboration or clarification or correction on?
That's pretty much right. I mean, you can look at the size of the perturbations relative to, for example, the normal range of those variables. And from a practical point of view, on a computer, you can make it really, really small until you start running into round off problems. Mm-hmm. So you can make it, extremely small, and then you're for sure going to be in the nonlinear regime.
One thing to point out here also is that this is a method that's similar to the calcium clamping. This is a method which is applicable in modeling studies, but not in experiments. But in this sort of second half of my talk, I'm going to propose an analogous approach that can be done in experiments.
Now, this is done for a cable?
No, everything we're doing is single cell.
So how do you do the boundary? What are the There's no boundaries.
No boundaries. Yeah, it's just a temporal system.
It's just a one variable model. You
have X. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
How do you? So you perturb a periodic orbit. Right?
Yeah.
At what time do you perturb? All the time? At the single time?
You do it at the same time every. For every variable.
What time you perturb? You can take it over.
Niels, what's the?
There are some spots that are more sensitive than others. If you haven't had problems with that, it is possible there's some more sensitive spots. Mm. You might be lucky to just kill spots that are bad. But it's true, there could be some sensitive.
But
you have
the unstable orbit, so you can try it in some spots. Right, yeah. In fact, we actually did that. We tried to get some spots and get the same eigenvalues. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it
doesn't matter where you start.
The normally
easy to follow.
Okay, other questions?
I have a problem with a comment on numerical derivatives. Actually, you can. You can work on the converter thing by choosing different terminal that way. Let's say if you convert to the same matrix, then you'll be fine. You don't necessarily use the smallest way.
I think that when Pete did these simulations, he did not do that for every simulation. He did a lot of simulations on a lot of different models. I think what he attempted to do was just to use something very small. And what we found was that the bifurcation into alternators always was very consistent with the transition of the eigenvalue from stable to unstable, as one would expect. Okay, so I think somebody asked a question that I promised to answer later about how do we do this for a period one, unstable period one. And I thought I had a slide for this, but I don't. So I think I need to describe it now. So for a stable period one, it's easy. You're at period one and you stimulate. For unstable period one, there's at least two ways you can do this. You have to basically locate the period one morphology. One way is to use action potential duration alternance control, which Alain spoke about a bit yesterday. So this is where you basically, your paradigm is you have a cell that's alternating and it's being stimulated at a fixed period one. You make, you eliminate the alternance by making very small perturbations to the stimulation. This has been shown successfully in a number of different, in rabbit hearts, heart tissue, and the recent collaborative work, Robert, myself, and Alain. So you basically get the system to the period one. You do this in a simulation. You get to the system to the period one by making these small, well-adjusted perturbations to the pacing interval. Once the system's at the period one, you now know the morphology. You're there. And then you can then make your small perturbations. That's one way to do it. That's not the way that Pete did it. The way that Pete did it was you have alternans. He basically took the during once alternans was manifested, he took the values of every state variable at the end of one cycle, and he took the average of them, and then he did it. And he's in alternans. Took the values of every state variable, he averaged them, and then simulated through another period, and he basically averaged those with the previous one. And it turns out that this works very well. I'm not so sure that I'm not so sure that you could prove analytically that this is an acceptable way of doing it, but this was a way that he came up with to do it. But basically, it doesn't really so much matter how you do it. The important thing is you have to get the system, you have to locate that unstable period one morphology. Once you're there, then you do your eigenmode analysis where you make your perturbations to the state variables. So once you're at your period one, we know what action potential clamping is, right? So you're at your period one fixed point. And you clamp your system at the next period with the morphology of the voltage is clamped by the morphology that you choose, and in this case we choose the period one morphology. The calcium clamp is directly analogous. So this time you're pacing, you're letting the voltage run free, but those in the Shifox model, those four variables that I showed earlier, those concentrations at the last unclamped period one morphology, each one of those variables has a particular time series as a function of time for the cycle length of the period. You then just clamp all those four variables according to that time series. You're basically then holding them in the exact morphology that they have during the period one system, and you're watching what the rest of the system does. So you're removing them from the equation, so to speak.
Yeah, this is kind of related to the question I was asked yesterday about, even though you have an action potential clamp, for example, the fact currents are alternating because the calcium transient is having secondary effects on them. But the same question here is, suppose you control action potential duration by varying the diastolic interval. You know, that action potential duration is not a unique function of the specific parameter set currents. So you're actually going to have alternating currents occurring during that action potential with the short diastolic interval versus the long diastolic interval, even though the action potential, the net effect on the action potential duration is the same. So the system is not really completely period one, it's just the action potential duration that's period one. The system is still alternating.
Once you go to the limit of in locating the period one, which I think is the part that you're talking about, in locating the period one, once you do your, if you're using the control approach paradigm to get there, once you go to the limit of basically you're on that fixed point, in an ideal mathematical system, Once you're on that fixed point, there's not going to be any, you're basically not going to have any more variability in your diastolic interval. Your perturbation size goes to zero.
That's the beauty of feedback control. So you're perturbing the system to change the stability, but once you're stable, your currents, nothing will oscillate exactly on the K1 fixed point. Practical implementation, you may have small fluctuations, but
yeah.
Theoretically speaking,
so what is the domain of attraction of this? As a simple feedback that's applied.
Turns out to be quite large in terms of the. Oh well, I'm not sure if I understood your question. It turns out that these action potential duration alternates is relatively easy to control. There's sort of a large parameter regime in terms of the feedback constant of the control. I'm not sure if I understood your question, though.
Tell me, Dharma, how much is gain? The maximum gain that you can put, like, stay with that.
Yeah, well, I think you can range gamma. Gamma over 2. Gamma can be usually around, say, something like minus 0.5 to minus 1 or something like that. Okay, so I just want to introduce this one figure because I'm going to be having a lot of slides that use this same general, have this same general look. And this is for one particular set of parameter values for the Shifox model, but I'm not going to tell you about those particular parameter values yet until the next slide. So this is a model, and what we did here was we scan the basic cycle length range. The X's are for pacing, so there's no clamping here. And so for this range of basic cycle length, the system is entirely unstable. So it's an and values on this side of this below the dashed line indicate, and I'm sorry, lambda A is the Y value. So this is the alternance eigenvalue. Anything below negative 1 is unstable, meaning the system will degenerate into alternans. Anything above the negative 1 line is stable. For pacing, for this particular set of parameters for the Shifox model, the system is always unstable. And as you pace faster, it becomes more unstable. The system moves further below the negative 1 dashed line. For action potential clamp, that's the open circles. For action potential clamp, for up until you get to about, say, from 500 to 300, the stability of the system is almost identical to that of the paced system. And it's only at the last sort of 100 milliseconds of basic cycle length that there's a deviation. If the values of the clamp system are identical or nearly identical to those of the paced system, what that says is that the variables that are being clamped are not important in the onset of alternans. So in this case, for this first 200 milliseconds in here, the membrane currents are not big players in terms of the onset of alternans. When you get from 300 to 225, you clamp the system with action potential clamping, the system becomes a little bit more stable. Because the system becomes a little bit more stable, that means that in the unclamped system here, those components were contributing some of the instability. So in this case here, for example, the membrane currents were contributing a little bit of the instability of the overall alternant system. These triangles here indicate the same simulations done with calcium clamping. What you see here is that when you clamp the calcium system over almost the entire regime of basic cycle lengths, the system becomes very stable. It moves way above the dashed line. What that means is that taken together, the calcium clamping and the action potential clamping, this is very consistent with the theory that I described on the second slide, that instability in alternans is generated by instability in the calcium system. Because when you remove the free-running ability of the calcium system, the system becomes stable. Only
except for that very fast pacing.
Only down here at the very fast pacing does the system not become fully stable, even when you clamp the calcium. But even at that very fast pacing, it's still so. At this very fast pacing, what I would say is that both the calcium and the voltage system are important players, but still calcium has a larger contribution because it moves it, when you clamp it, it moves it closer to stability.
So are you clamping the calcium at a fixed level or as a fixed transient?
As a fixed transient that you measured so during your last period one pre-clamping beat, you make a lookup table of all the calcium values as a function of time during that basic cycle length for all those calcium concentrations, and then you clamp it according to those.
And have you looked at APD restitution during those same pacing rates under those conditions, and is the slope? You might think that the point where the APD clamp deviates there is where the slope of APD restitution starts to get steep. Right, because now you're bringing in the voltage and stability
in addition
to the calcium and stability. And so have you looked at the
restitution curve? We haven't. And it's something...
Because that model does have steep...
Yeah. So I think that, you know, so this... I'm not sure. I'm sure that we haven't, but I'm trying to think about what we might see. I have to think about it more.
So in this calcium pump condition, you could have variation in the actual influx to the L-type calcium channel, but you kind of ignore that.
You don't ignore that. That's just it. That contributes to the membrane potential change, to the membrane potential, but it doesn't. Right. So we ignore. We don't allow it to change the concentrations, but those are still the L-type calcium current and the sodium calcium exchange current are still important players in the stability of the system. So L-type calcium and sodium calcium exchange current are present in all of these simulations. You can't separate those and say that they're purely part of the voltage system or part of the calcium system. They're part of both systems.
By unstable, you're getting alternans or the second one?
Yes. In this particular, Elizabeth, I'll get your. So. That was one panel off of this figure. It's this panel here. This figure shows nine different parameter regimes of the Shifox model in the same experiments applied to each, same simulations applied to each one. And I'm going to describe some of these panels in detail in the next couple of slides. But what we have here is that, So in this panel here, so there's three notable variables for the Shifox model that Johannes and Alain did a lot of work in terms of shifting those around in terms of looking at the types of alternans. There's the U, which is the sarcoplasmic reticulum release slope. There's tau F, which is the voltage-dependent L-type calcium inactivation. And there's gamma. We set gamma equal to 0.7 in all of our simulations, and that gets the concordant voltage calcium alternans. So for this panel, U was 5, tau F was 20. For this panel, U was 11, tau F was 20. For this panel, U was 22, tau F was 20. So as you move up, you're increasing U. For this, as you move across at the bottom, your U is still equal to 5, tau F is 40, U is equal to 5, tau F is 60. And so you're increasing tau F in this direction. Basically, one of the findings consistent with Johannes and Alain's work is that you would predict when you're in the large U small tau F regime, the system is dominated more by calcium. And when you're in the large tau F, small U regime, the system is dominated more by voltage. So I'm going to talk in more detail about those two panels on the next slide, but I just wanted to help you see how to interpret this. So again, this is nine different sort of forms of the Shifox model.
So this gamma makes the electromechanical alternant concordant, but doesn't mean that the coupling is constant?
Johannes, can you describe the gamma, please?
Yeah, if you put gamma up to 27, then large calcium always corresponds to large energy.
Right.
Does mean always positive coupling or not?
Yeah, it is.
All right.
I want to explain for people physiology. So it varies the relative importance of calcium dependent activation in the exchanger.
So if it turns to be a higher value, it's going to integrate the calcium card more. Which means that the exchanger is the dominant coupling between calcium and ATP. So it's that place. The large calcium always means large ATP.
Okay, so so let's look at this case. Again, the X's are the free running pacing, the circles are the action potential clamp, and the triangles are the calcium clamp. This is the one that I used in the introductory slide a couple slides ago, and the situation is very similar, but it's even more exaggerated. Where when you with action potential clamp, only at the very highest pacing rates do you have any deviation from the free running pacing situation. So only and even then it's very small. So the contribution to voltage to this to alternators of this system is very small. It's basically negligible, and it's even, you could say, negligible even at the high pacing rates. However, when you clamp the calcium system, the system becomes stable at all pacing rates. So really this is a system in which the alternans is driven by calcium. The other extreme is this case here. The X's are the free running pacing. So you basically, when you cross the dashed line, you move from period one into alternans here at, I don't know, like 300 milliseconds. Now, when you apply action potential clamp, which are the circles, okay, at all pacing cycle lengths, the system becomes stable. So you eliminate the alternans by applying the action potential clamp. That means that the voltage coupling system was a key, and in fact, we'll see, dominant contributor to the cause of alternans in this system. Calcium clamping makes the system more stable at all values, but it doesn't have nearly as stabilizing effect as the voltage system. So again, so what this would say is that both of them are important players, but in this particular system, the voltage is dominant. Is that Fabio?
Do you have a graph that you show the action potentials for all these changes?
No.
How the shape or the duration of the changes with respect to each other?
I don't.
Do they change a lot, or is it basically close to the same?
For these different.
Yeah, you change all these parameters.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But for those of you that don't like this particular approach with the Shifox model and all these values, those of you who are familiar with the ionic models, I'm going to show some simulations for four other ionic models with sort of standard values. So I don't have what you're asking for, but maybe the other curves will resonate with you. Okay. So let me talk about this case here. This is sort of an intermediate case. In this case, at for example, basic cycle length of 350 milliseconds, I should have drawn some lines on here to show you where that is, especially since I'm standing off to the side. But at 350 milliseconds, the calcium clamping, calcium clamping again are these triangles. The calcium, at 300 milliseconds, this basically the system is more like this system. Where you clamp the calcium, the system becomes stable. So it appears that in this case, the calcium dominates. However, if you go down to 250 milliseconds, it's sort of reversed. So now the voltage, clamping the voltage, causes the system to become more stable, whereas clamping the calcium has a lesser effect. So it's more like this case down here. So this is kind of a hybrid case where at some basic cycle lengths, the calcium is dominant. At other basic cycle lengths, the voltage is dominant. At most basic cycle lengths for most of these systems and most of the models we look at, both contribute. It's just which some of them sort of equally, but in some cases it's dominant. One thing I'd like to emphasize with this particular slide is that if there's any reality to this system, which I'm sure there are skeptics to that, one thing that I think it should emphasize is that if one is doing an action potential clamping experiment of the type that in the Chudin paper, and only looking at it at a sort of a small subset of basic cycle lengths, one or a few, it could be entirely possible that you might conclude that the cell is only calcium dominated or only voltage dominant. You might miss something. I'm sorry? Why is it dominant? Oh, that means it means that that when you couple the calcium concentration system to the it means that the calcium system is dominant, and that if you remove that from the system, it means when that system is present, that subsystem is present in the overall system. Is that okay?
Well, the calcium plant. How did you choose the calcium waveform for which detail?
Okay, so that's an important point that I probably didn't make very well. For each and every BCL, you have to relocate the period one fixed point, either by doing this averaging thing that I described that Pete did, or doing the alternance control. When you're doing calcium clamping, the waveform for those four components is unique for each basic cycle length. So for every one of these points, calcium clamping or action potential clamping, you have to redo the initial condition finding, so that you're really looking at the period one for that system. If you don't do that, then you're not really looking at the period one system.
So what about the voltage?
The same thing. It's directly analogous.
Again, I get the diagrams and all the stability analysis you're doing, but it would be nice to really show, because for example, look at your panel C, the minimum diastolic interval where you get blocked is different between all these other panels. So that's why I think, in order to see how physiologically all these changes you're doing, we need to know what are the duration of the APD, how long is the APD that you have, how small is the minimum DI, minimum APD. Because for example, your panel A,
that means that all the APDs are very small, and there's no length effect when you change the cycle length.
Mm-hmm. I agree. If we want to try to determine sort of the physiological relevance of any one of these panels, we need to do that. And but we didn't attempt to do that. And I'm not so sure that we should try to draw physiological relevance from any one of these particular cases. What I'm trying to do here is to show. And maybe it'll be a little more compelling when I look at these other models, to show that the method is able to when you have different types of systems, the approach is able to tease out the contributions of the voltage or the calcium system. Certainly, some of these systems are probably not physiological, but maybe some of them are. Hopefully, some of them are. I'm not trying to make a statement about which mechanism here, whether the voltage or the calcium is dominant. I'm not trying to make that type of statement with this analysis. What I'm trying to show is that there can be situations in which either or both are dominant, and that this approach using ionic models is able to tease that out. Now, an advantage of ionic models is that you can try to get to what you're talking about, and that can perhaps when I get to the other models, we can look at that.
I understand what you're trying to do, but this particular model was based on actual data, so we know where the bifurcation occurs in the data, and we know where it occurs in the tissue, in the model. So it seems to me that if you've got alternans and times greater than 250 milliseconds, it's not physiologic.
Okay. I don't disagree with that.
But that was for, the model was for Christian diabetes.
No, it was for...
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, there are, as I said, presumably panels here which are not physiological, but I'm not trying to make a physiological statement with this.
So you're calculating this largest negative eigenvalue,
mm-hmm.
that eigenvalue versus eigenvector. And so how do the eigenvectors change during this whole?
Is it always the same eigenvector? But is it always the same element?
But the largest negative eigenvalue
should change.
It should change. That's what I mean. Yeah. The perturbation might look different. So what you're saying here is it goes unstable, but the question is, how does it go unstable?
You can't go from the eigenvalue backwards and connect it to a particular, at least as I understand.
You see the linear response of your system, which is the eigenvector, right?
Yeah.
This is the thing that grows the first.
Yeah.
So the whole linear stability analysis itself.
Yeah, but each eigenvalue is a composite of all the perturbations, right? So I don't know that you can go backwards from the eigenvalue and attribute it.
Do you ever discontinuously change from reporting lambdas for one eigenvector
mm-hmm.
and now suddenly reporting lambdas for another eigenvector, which has gotten larger?
That's kind of what I try to say. Is it a continuous change? Or
right. Well, I don't know what you would mean by continuous change. So yes, you can change, but... As was mentioned, but it's, and I guess it would be discontinuous because it's from one basic cycle length to the next basic cycle.
What is the second largest eigenvector? How negative is that one? How much is it different from the leading eigenvector?
Yeah.
I mean, that's very important because that tells you what this thing goes actually unstable. So I mean, you do a linear stability analysis and that tells you something. And you would like to know what is the separation? What does the system actually want to do if it goes unstable? And it's linearly, as soon as you go nonlinear, well, that's a lot, right?
In these models, it tends to be a big jump. There's a large negative eigenvalue, and then the second largest one is a lot smaller.
It's a lot smaller and faster, so
it should be.
Yeah,
right.
And I think it's like a different order of magnitude.
And so it's always basically the same eigenvector.
Yeah.
Well, that was basically my question, that's all.
I'm not sure if that has been tracked, or I know it hasn't been tracked at every single basic cycle length in all of the simulations, but it has been tested a little bit, yeah.
So the y-axis there, the lambda A, is typically represents the value of one.
Of the largest, item. Yeah, right.
Doesn't rip between.
Right. Well, I allowed the audience to lead me in one direction, and my colleague has thrown me a lifeline and drawn me back to the correct answer. So,
let me just clarify my understanding. You were studying the stability of period one, cycles, right? In a phase space.
Yeah.
But you're studying that in a funny way because you're clamping either the potassium or the potential. Right?
Well, I agree with the second part. I'm not going to say yep right to the funny part yet, but maybe. Okay.
You're studying the stability, the linear stability of a period one cycle in the presence of either calcium clamping or actual potential clamping.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So you
pulled a lot of, you know, things, but, you know, basically that's what you do. And you're studying, I mean, usually you don't have, when you study this stability of the periodic cycle, in a normal sense, you're not clamping anything.
Yeah, because the reason we're clamping is we're trying to...
Because you want to explain the experiment, the result that people have produced by clamping this the action potential in a functional way.
Partially, yes. Yeah.
So that's what makes it difficult.
So that's the ability analysis on the clamp condition.
Right,
but the clamp. If I understood correctly, there are many studies. One is the stability analysis, development. And then under some special condition, this is
granted.
That's why it does. No, it was simply facing also. So it was, it's facing and then clamping the voltage in vertical fashion.
Right.
So it's easy to see.
So he's mainly talking about the other two. I mean,
well, he's comparing the changes, how they change from the freeway.
Oh, okay.
Also, does it depend on the shape of the clamping?
Yes. And I'll get to that. If you don't use the morphology, certainly in theory it should. If you don't use the period one, say in talking voltage clamping, if you don't use the period one morphology of the voltage trace, but use something different, then there's no reason to believe that you're not looking at the system properly. And I'll show you an example of that in a few slides. Okay, so. this is the same type of graph plotting the alternator's eigenvalue as a function of basic cycle length for four different models. The top model is a 10 Tuescher human ventricular myocyte model in the epicardial, mid-myocardial, and endocardial forms that they describe in their paper. This is the Fox part of the Schifox. So this is the CVM models. This is canine ventricular myocyte. This is Luo Rudy 1 guinea pig. And this is the Hunden Rudy canine ventricular myocyte model. Okay, I'm going to talk about them sort of separately. Let's look at the 10 Tuescher. The three 10 Tuescher cases are pretty similar. It doesn't really matter so much whether you're looking at the epicardial, mid-myocardial, or endocardial. For the 10 Tuescher model, first of all, one notable thing is that there really is no alternans, except for in the mid-myocardial when it crosses below the dashed line. However, just because there's no alternans doesn't mean that you can't measure the stability of the period one and quantify the contributions of the voltage and calcium systems. Well, you may say, well, this is why, if there's no alternators, it's not really relevant to the question. But in this system, the voltage, when you clamp the action potential morphology, the system becomes much more stable, meaning that the contributions to the tendency to go unstable are dominated by voltage. In this one case here, I'm not going to make any physiological relevance for this, but in this one case here, this is just interesting, I guess, from a modeling perspective, but I'll point it out. The X's are the paste, and the triangles, again, are the calcium clamping. In this case, when you clamp the calcium system, it actually makes the system more unstable. And this is the only case we saw, well, I guess you see it in all the cases, but the system actually becomes more unstable when you destabilize the system, meaning that in the 10 Tuescher model, the calcium system actually tends to stabilize the system.
So I guess this model doesn't have this equally slow relationship, or is that why the calcium is not strong contributor?
It doesn't. I missed the first part of your question.
Well, what kind of really slow relationship?
Is that the new model?
No, it's the previous, it's a 2004 model. I'm not that familiar with the kinetics, but I'm sure Flavio is. Alain asked about the kinetics of the calcium system of the 10-Tuescher model. Can you speak to that?
But I would interpret these graphs as basically saying that, you know, that model doesn't include some mechanism for calcium altering, like what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. The other comment is looking at stability, even in a case where alterns are stable, is interesting, I mean, whether by this method or other method, because alterns can be transient due to change of cycle lengths, and they can become discordant transiently and provide a substrate. So I think, you know, even if you're stable, but weakly stable, that's important.
Let me just talk about this model, the Hunden-Rudy model. In this case, both paste at the x's. This is kind of a pretty bad graph, but these sort of circle, squarish, these are here are the action potential clamping, and this is the calcium clamping. In this case, both the calcium coupling and the voltage coupling destabilize the period one. But as the system becomes unstable here, you cross to negative one, it's really the circles, the voltage system is here, and the calcium system follow the paste system. So in this, the Hunden-Rudy model, the voltage system is really what's driving the alternans as opposed to the calcium system.
The calcium formulation in that model is based on?
I don't know.
What's the model? Yeah, on the 100. Because I thought that actually had calcium alternators during voltage based on your model.
The voltage really, it doesn't have a lot of calcium dynamics in it. It's got phosphorylation too.
Yeah.
So what ions are you guys
I can show you how you can get to that question in the modeling. At the end, I have a slide that sort of you could do this. You could do analysis where you basically make perturbations to the individual ion channels and see which of those tend to destabilize or stabilize the system most, and then you could kind of infer from that. What you will find is that any one of the ion channels make contributions to the stability because they're all coupled. It's just which are the sort of largest players. And if you're thinking in terms of, say, a therapy, one way to think about it is that, well, I'm going to go after the ones that are the largest players. But another way to think about it is maybe because of the side effects or the ability to synthesize drugs or whatever, it may be that even if it's a sort of a small player, that people haven't really thought about in terms of alternans, you might be able to go after that because it does have an effect on the stability. But I could show you a slide kind of towards the end with some details about that.
So the Hunden-Rudy model there, the open circles are the ones that curves up. So under action potential clamp conditions, it never alternates. Is that right?
That's right.
So then the calcium cycle must be stable, basically.
Right, or yeah.
It's not capable of producing a lot of
energy. On its own, that's right.
So in general, it seems that on this page, things are reversed compared to the Shipov's model.
Well, it depends. In general, on this page, things are more consistent with the this quadrant of the Shipov's model. But as people have pointed out, those models don't have particularly advanced calcium systems, and a large motivation behind the development of the Shifox model was to explain a lot of the calcium alternans effects and to basically incorporate a better calcium system. So one might say that those other models are just not very good, or at least not very good at explaining alternans.
Whether the Shifox model has a more realistic or better calcium description, or simply operates in a parameter space where the calcium it tends to destabilize.
I think one of the points, and one of the points that I'd like to make is that I don't want to try to advocate as to which model is best, because I think every model has its advantages and disadvantages, and I'm sure there are people who would want to advocate, but that's not what I'm trying to do. The range of models show sort of a wide range of system effects, and if there are bits of truth in some of these various models, it would imply that the system is you know, there are contributions from both subsystems.
There has to be one that best reproduces the experimental data.
Well, I guess it also depends on which experimental data we're talking about. So one thing I would suggest I would throw out there is that, you know, maybe the Shifox model is best at reproducing ventricular, you know, epicardial data from a canine, right? But how do we know that that's really the best data from human endocardium or something like that? One of the points I'm going to try to convince you of is that, implied by the title, is that these simulations might suggest a couple of things. One, it might suggest that some of these models are really bad, and that therefore we shouldn't use them to study alternans. Another is that it might suggest that the sort of richness and variety of models, even if there are a lot of errors in the models, is not that inconsistent with what we know is a rich variety of cell types across species and across locations. And if we can see these many differing effects in models, I think that I would suggest that there are potentially large differences in different cell types and species. And even if I'm wrong on that, I would at least suggest that we should look for them and find out that they're all the same mechanism.
So you know, in the rubber last question, we said there's a physiological Shifox model. Isn't it known where the alternans are actually happening and what cycle length? And from that, you could actually infer which one of those plots, you know, which U and tau F might actually be physiologically reasonable, because you can at least limit the number of tau's and U's to some range and can say in this range of tau and U's, this is where I actually see at least some qualitative agreement with the onset of AP.
We've done similarities, right, with our rabbit myocyte data to fit those curves, and so we can define a physiological regime.
Right.
Now, you know, the tau F and the U are still phenomenological variables, really.
Well, that's what I mean.
You can fit the data very nicely and show what regime it works in. And in the rabbit, you know, the onset of alternans occurs at around 200 millisecond cycle length, probably, and the calcium instability is what initially drives that. And it's not until you get, and sometimes it's really fascinating. We have some myocytes in which you start pacing it at increasing rates, and you'll actually see the bifurcation start at around 200 millisecond cycle length. And then as you pace faster and faster, and you get down to around 150 or 140, the curves actually come together again. Mm-hmm. And we think that's because the incomplete recovery from activation of the calcium current is actually depleting the SR, so that the gain function is going down, the mechanism driving calcium alternans goes away. You keep pacing faster, and then you see the curves diverge again at the point at which APD restitution gets very steep. Mm-hmm. So we think under those conditions you can actually separate the calcium-driven alternans and the voltage. But it, you know, we see that in a minority of the myocytes, because in most cases it appears that the offset of the calcium, you know, though it extends past the onset of the voltage-driven mechanism. But the two also interact with each other. So, for example, if you use action potential clamp, we see the onset of calcium alternans occur sooner than if we use a free-running action potential. And you can understand that because of the way in which the long action potential, if you have positive coupling between calcium and voltage, the long action potential during the big calcium release event will tend to fill up the SR more for the small V, and therefore you'll release a larger amount. So you can actually reverse the phase actually of alternans by going from period 1 AP clamp to a period 2 AP.
So wouldn't it mean a change in eigenvectors? Where you go from voltage to calcium, wouldn't that change the eigenvector?
I think so, yeah.
It seems to me that the eigenvector then has to change because it says that the system is...
Well, you know, in the PRE paper that by Johannes and Daisuke and Allen, there's a graph where they show, maybe I can I draw it on the board?
Sure.
Because it's very relevant to this. You know, where they adjust the band-aid here. You know, they have a voltage.
Jim, sorry, can you draw it all the way to the right?
No.
Let me see, go back.
So this is essentially the tau f that's determining the steepness of APD restitution. So this is the eigenvalue for the voltage-driven alternans. So the value, you know, if you completely uncouple the calcium, this is the point of instability where you would get alternans. This is the value of the U factor, the gain of. Yeah. So when its value goes to 1, you would get, if the accident voltage were clamped, you would get calcium-induced alternans here, right? And if you have positive coupling, so the AP to calcium coupling is positive, and the calcium to APD coupling is positive, the iterative map predicts that, you know, you don't need... I guess these points come to here. So in other words, if you have complete stability in calcium, you have to reach an APD restitution slope of 1 to get alternans. But if you have some instability in the calcium that's also positive, so the couplings are synergistic, you actually don't need to reach that slope of 1 in order to get alternans. And similarly, if you have stability in your voltage, you need to get all the way to the cutoff value of U or whatever to give you alternans. But if, as you increase the instability of the voltage, you move to this point. And those are predictions of the iterative map completely. If you have negative coupling where the two go against each other, you get this kind of pattern where, you know, this is going to be electromechanically discordant, this is electromechanically concordant, and this is the quasi-periodic motion. So all the points that you are showing here in your graphs essentially are ionic model maps that could define, you know, points on here, although your eigenvalue is a little different. It's not identical to what these are, but it still will define the border of instability under those conditions, depending on the values you choose for the tau. Mm-hmm.
So isn't it that the point where these curves get tossed to minus 1? Down because this is instability.
Yeah, so it should be minus 1.
No, I mean, what I mean is it's where these curves get plotted in those numbers to minus 1.
Yes.
That's what you plot in here.
So for each of those parameter sets, you could define one of the points on that curve and see how it compares.
Okay. from what I've talked about so far, I want to just make some points here, which I think we probably made over and over again, but let me just read through them. Even if calcium is the dominant cause of an alternator's instability, the simulation suggests that bidirectional voltage coupling is an important contributor in many situations. If we suppose, this is kind of a point I made a bit ago, if we suppose that the different models represent different cell types and or species, and they don't necessarily, aren't meant to do that, but if we suppose that the heterogeneity of models is sort of representative of heterogeneity of cell types, these results suggest that there may be a range or even a continuum of voltage calcium alternating causes. And so now I'm going to talk about whether or not we can investigate these calcium coupling contributions experimentally. And if the answer to this is yes, I suggest that we should probably look for such cell type species variability. And I think the answer is yes. Back to the slide that I showed at the beginning where I made this point that these results from this Chun paper are definitely applicable to the paste, to the action potential clamp cell, but they may not be applicable to the unclamped cells. And I'm just going to discuss the three reasons, one or two of which we've already seen. One reason is that the contributions of calcium and voltage may be cycle-like dependent. So experiments should systematically scan the entire alternator's BCL range. Now, some of the things I'm going to be talking about, the experiments, I realize are very difficult. Okay, this would take a long time to do this. I'm going to suggest an experiment at which you can get the calcium clamping data because you can't clamp the calcium system, but I'm going to suggest a way that you can get these data. With one of the caveats being that I realize that to do this for whatever there is, 30 different basic cycle lengths, it would take a long time. It may not be feasible but that's more of a practical limitation than a theoretical limitation. So that's one potential reason. Another reason is that what I'll call the Chudin cell, which is the cell used in that experiment, the type of that cell, if we consider that, say, these are different types of cells, again, acknowledging that some of them are not physiological, but the type of that cell is maybe ambiguous. For example, it could be voltage dominant panel E occurring at this line, or calcium dominant panel A occurring at this line. So for example, what we found was that when we clamped action potential, when we did action potential clamping, calcium still alternated. And what we see here is paste cell, which we have alternans because lambda A is much less than minus 1. So that's alternans. And we have action potential clamping cell, and lambda A still is much less than 1. So that's alternans as well. So in this case, this is a calcium-dominated system. We clamped action potential morphology, and this would be consistent. This parameter regime would be consistent with that data. However, this would also be consistent with that data. In this case, hang on a second. I'm not sure why I chose this one instead of this one, but
you need both of them.
Yeah. So in this case, right. Thanks. In this case, again, you clamp the action potential, and you still have alternans. However, there are significant contributions from both voltage and calcium in this case. I think
C would be a better. Because with C, both curves can get up below the dashed line there.
Yeah.
So you could have instability.
Yeah.
In here.
In here. Okay, anyway, the point I was trying to make, and I have to sort of revisit this figure, is that just interpreting, looking at those results, you don't really know for sure that it's calcium. Okay. And this is gets to the point that Flavio was making earlier. The third reason is that I'm going to suggest that the action potential clamping experiments really should use the period one action potential morphology rather than an arbitrary morphology. And this is simulations using the Hund and Rudy model. I didn't note the basic cycle length, but I can find that out what we did here was this is during alternance. Okay, so we took the system during alternance. We stabilized the period one, and then we released the control. So we used action potential control. We released the control. And then what we did was we took, at that given basic cycle length, we took, as the system diverged from the period one, it goes through different morphologies. The action potential goes through different morphologies. But each of those is a physiological, if you consider the model physiological, a physiological action potential morphology for that basic cycle length, because it's a real, it pops right out of the model, and it would pop right out of a system if you did this with a real cell. And these are those three morphologies at the same basic cycle length, dashed, solid, and dotted. And what we, if you then clamp the system using those three morphologies, you'll get three different calcium transient signals. For the dotted morphology, you get this alternans, and for the solid and dashed morphologies, you get these alternans. And so the point that I'm trying to make is that at least in theory, the stability of the system is really dependent on the morphology of that you use for the clamp, both in the calcium and the voltage clamping. In this case, that turned out to definitely be true. No.
In these cases, it's more than morphology. Seems the amplitude, right? Because the amplitude is larger.
Well, amplitude is what is amplitude is morphology.
Well, yeah, but I mean the shape seems the same. It just only shifts the amplitude a little bit, right? So maybe you have more time.
All right. My point is that you shouldn't choose an arbitrary action potential morphology or amplitude or whatever for a basic cycle length. Whether you call it morphology or amplitude, yes?
I think it is true, but I would expect that the sensitivity of the calcium transient alternance or morphology of the action potential clamp would be true closer to the bifurcation. In fact, if you go close to bifurcation, you would have infinite sensitivity to your action potential clamp. So if you showed me these for different basic cycle lengths, and you got that sensitivity at all basic cycle lengths, then there's something that would surprise me. Or I think what you would find is that in the stable regime where there are no alternates, there won't be much sensitivity. And in the from the unstable regime, there also won't be much sensitivity. But closer to bifurcation, sure you're going to get sensitivity.
Yeah, so you're
and in... That result in and of itself is, I'm not sure what it brings.
But I think this, you have this voltage levels are dramatically affecting the relative contributions of the calcium current entry versus sodium calcium exchange. Mm-hmm. So over many beats, it's going to build the SR to a different level. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect, you can have big effects on the transient.
You're saying even not close to the instability threshold.
I'm not sure.
Well, I think your intuition is better than mine, because I really believed that this would be easy to find, and it turns out so. I'm showing the Hund-Rudy model instead of the Shifox model because we didn't find this type of sensitivity in the Shifox model. It turns out it is a bit of a special case.
Thank God, because Colleen is absolutely right. That makes me very nervous to see differences.
However,
differences of that magnitude turning into alternans or no alternans, because anybody who showed you the straight line and said I'm modeling it with the dotted line, you'd say, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. however, I think that even if it is a special case, it doesn't discount the if one is going to. Well, let me talk about the next slide.
Could you be hopping? I mean, I think this is the same thing. Could you be hopping back and forth between part of the room and the shell part there? And that's why.
sitting right on that boundary.
I think so. This is on the same point, and there have been a couple or a few papers that have done this action potential clamp approach, and as best as I can tell from the methods, none of them have attempted to use the period one action potential morphology when they do the clamp. They don't say what they use for the morphology, but they show the figures. And in the Chudin paper, it appears to me that the clamping morphology that they use is closer to, so this is the free unclamped cell, long short here, and these sort of red lines are meant to just be visual guides to show the APD of the long and the short. And this is the action potential clamp. So this is basically PowerPoint and Photoshop analysis. And so if you look at this one, the morphology of this action potential appears from the paper to be closer to the long action potential than say the short. But my point is not to criticize this paper, but to say that even if it is a special case, I think what needs to do these experiments in the most rigorous way, you need to clamp using the period one action potential morphology. Okay, so I think I stand by that statement, and there were a lot of caveats in there. So experimentalists or you can sort of poo-poo the level of how important this contribution is, but if you're not clamping at the real period one morphology, you are approximating the system stability, but you're not getting the actual system stability. Okay, let me see if I can.
So if you do clamp with the period one action, are you saying then that you actually won't get alternation?
No. What I'm saying is that. What I'm saying is that it may be that you are, for example, getting calcium alternans in a situation in which you basically are sort of applying a morphology to the calcium subsystem which is not its period one morphology. It's away from its period one morphology, and since it's an unstable system, it's forcing the calcium system. The calcium system has no choice but to alternate. Okay, so let me see if I can just suggest how this can be done experimentally. And these are slides that Pete made. So the idea here is you have your cell. It's alternating. You apply the action potential control, and then you allow it to diverge from this state. And what you do is you quantify the rate at which it diverges. And so in this case, this is plotting the action potential duration at the nth beat as a function of the beat number. And so this is during control, and then you turn off control, say, here, and it diverges into alternans. And if you plot the action potential duration at the n plus 1 beat versus action potential duration at n, the slope of that map will be able to tell you about the stability of this system. And so if the system is less stable, meaning in which case as you turn off control it bifurcates more rapidly, then you have a steeper line here. And if the system is more stable, you have a shallower line. Okay, so it takes longer to bifurcate. Now, experimentally, what this is meant to show, this is the same parameters as one of the panels in the Shiffox model, is that whether you're measuring the action potential duration or you're using the calcium fluorescence, if you plot them against the value from the previous beat, you basically will get the same readout of the stability of the system. And so I'm going to propose that we use the calcium fluorescence. Now, what we're doing here is we're clamping. We're doing a paste cell experiment and a action potential clamp cell experiment. Basic cycle length 400, and for both of them, we basically have found the period one, and then we release control. In the paste cell, we basically release control, and we're just stimulating. In the action potential clamp cell, we release control being changes to the pacing interval, and we clamp according to the morphology of the last action potential prior to the release of control. In this case, we find that the stability is identical in the two, and so that would be the same as basically the alternans eigenvalue for the paced and unpaced, clamped and unclamped system being the same. So in that case, the voltage system is not a big contributor to the alternates. All right, and that is this system here that we saw earlier at this basic cycle length, and that's these two points here. That's consistent with these. These are alternates eigenvalues. That's consistent with this point here, where the clamped and unclamped cells have the same stability. Now, if we do with that same parameter space, if we go to basic cycle length 270 and we repeat, for the unclamped cell, it's much more unstable. It has a steeper, a faster divergence than for the clamped cell. Okay? So the unclamped cell is less stable than the clamped cell, which means that the bidirectional voltage coupling is tending to stabilize the system, and so bidirectional voltage coupling is important in the destabilization. And that is, for this basic cycle length here, the circle, the clamped action potential, and the X's, the unclamped system. Now, if we repeat that experiment for all the basic cycle lengths, and we quantify these slopes, again, this is for 400, that's these. This is for 270, that's these. If we quantify those slopes as a function of basic cycle length, we get the paced cell here, the unpaced cell here, and those are exactly equivalent to the values that you get for the alternate. This is the alternate's eigenvalue. It's a function of basic cycle length. And the numbers are the same for the unpaced, the unclamped cell and the clamped cell. And you can only do this in the alternans regime, because if you're in the period one stable regime, there's no divergence, so you can't quantify it. So you can quantify this in the alternans regime. So what I'm suggesting is that although it may be very difficult, this seems to be theoretically possible to do this. In which case, you could quantify the contributions of the voltage system to the instability of alternans at a range in the entire basic cycle length range that alternans occurs in your real cell. You can't quantify the calcium. You can't repeat this calcium clamping experiment, but you can at least infer that, say, for here, if the voltage system is not contributing to the alternans, then, well, it must be the calcium system. And for here, here the voltage system is contributing a lot to the instability. You don't really know in that case what the calcium could be here, or it could be up here. All right, so that was my last slide. So to summarize, the action potential clamp experiments to date, in my opinion, cannot rule out the possibility of a dominant or at least a contributory role for voltage coupling in the onset of alternans. I suggest that future experiments in this area should use alternans control to find and use the real period one action potential morphology at each basic cycle length. They should scan the complete range of basic cycle lengths. they should, and then you could quantify the contribution of the voltage coupling by turning off the control and measuring the divergence from the period one of the calcium signal. And you can't quantify directly the voltage coupling, but in some cases you can at least infer if the voltage system is not a player, then it must be the calcium system. And that's it. Since we're running short on time, I'm not going to show you the slide, but I'm happy to show it to you afterwards. Okay, thanks.
I like the idea of controlling the cell and looking at the natural instability, but does the feedback control work when the instability is calcium dominated? And I could think of an extreme case where the feedback on the pacing period just fails to control, and then I could use this approach.
Right. We haven't found a case where the feedback control doesn't work.
Even in the calcium dominated, it works.
Yeah.
Is it really that sensitive on your action potential that you put in? We really have to sit on the orbit. I mean, isn't it good enough to just choose something and you would get find similar results?
I think at the very least you need to choose something very close. I showed that example with the Hund and Rudy model of I'm not disagreeing with you. I showed the example of the Hund and Rudy model of three morphologies where the APD was pretty similar, and there were slight differences in the morphology. We saw quite a difference, but that was a special case. However, I think you don't really know. I don't think the answer to your question is really known, and since it's not known, I think that unless you do it, I think that this is the right way to do it, although albeit very difficult way to do it. Well, it's more than theoretical. It can be done. It's not like the eigenmode analysis, which can't be done in experiments, right? It can be done, at least as in my thinking, I think it can be done, but I think it would be difficult. But I'm not here to say to describe whether or not something is difficult. I'm just saying, look, I think that this is how, if possible, these experiments should be done.
No, I understand. It's very nice. But the question that I had is, you take the free running model and you take, for example, just the long interval action potential, like you said, came out from this other experiment.
Yeah.
Then I would redo this whole analysis with that action potential, just and see do I still find.
Right. So we haven't done. Right. So perhaps
saying whether it's voltage dominated or calcium dominated, you might still be able to say that without going through the tedious cost of trying to stabilize.
Well, first of all, it's actually not that tedious. To stabilize is actually, you could actually do it. The tedious part here is not the stabilization. If you have the right system in place where you could do this type of control, it's very quick. You could just turn it on, and it'll get there pretty quickly. In fact, I think doesn't add any work to the experiment. I think the tedious part is scanning the basic cycle length regime and doing this over and over and over again. For all sorts of reasons that the experimentalists know much better than me. You basically run into issues where you have do an experiment for a long time in a cell. But as far as doing the control part of it, even if you ignore number two, to scan the complete range, you could still do this. It may be tedious for someone to implement the software to do this, but it's not tedious to. I don't think it adds much time at all to the experiment.
But how stable is the cell? So, cell variability, if the cell gets older, the cell changes over time.
Yeah, so that would be an argument to skip this, but not an argument to skip this. Well, I'm just saying that in terms of the amount of time in an experiment, this is very quick. You can get control in a matter of 10 beats.
But it's easy to compare.
It's a good idea.
It's easy to compare just choosing.
It is
the middle,
right.
Let's say
that's right.
The duration and compare it to the right way to do it.
That's right. So that would be. So I'm not disagreeing with the idea that that this, the need to do this needs more rigorous analysis. But in theory, this is the right way to do it. And how, whether or not we need to do this or not, I guess I should say, whatever, maybe the book is still out, because the need to do this really hinges on how far the deviation is. And at least a further modeling study could attempt to quantify that. But then again, they're still using a model, and you don't know what it really needs with real stuff.
Okay, thank you. So me with further question for Dave at the break, and we can reconvene at 11. Okay.